too and carry that on. But we want to start with a story. And two of our group members here are willing to act that out. First, we will have from Iowa City a wonderful baseball player that's just in town, and from New York City, a chef that has just arrived. And another player will be the somewhat bumbling, tries to be very helpful, but doesn't always necessarily do that person. So, we'll just let them go ahead and start the story.
I require that orange.
It's
my absolute
need. It's mine.
No.
How fortunate for you that I came at the exact time you needed help. Give me the orange. Thank you. I need this. Everyone knows when in a conflict like this, there is only one logical solution. I will be very precise. I will cut this orange perfectly, exactly, exceedingly fairly in half. Give half to you and half to you. I guess half an orange is better than nothing. Okay, let's thank our chef and sports player. Great job, you guys.
We'll go help clean up.
No, we'll just leave that for now. So let's just debrief what happened there. What did you see?
Solomon Revisited.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What?
Solomon Revisited.
Oh, yeah.
They need to go back to the sandbox.
And what about my role? How did I help or hinder this whole effort?
You made some assumptions and jumped in and thought you had the solution.
Absolutely. This we talk about in needs and positions. People often have positions because they felt the conflict and they know what they want. So, sports player, what was the position that she was probably after here? What was she saying she needed?
She needed the baseball.
She could have needed a baseball, and that's why she was grabbing the orange. Yeah, I don't even know that because I didn't follow through. The chef, he was saying he wanted the orange, but what did the chef want?
He wanted
juice.
He only wanted the peeling.
Yeah, he's just saying, I just hope this is enough orange peel to flavor my cake. And junks the orange. The reality is this happens more often than we would like to think. We have a preconception of what the solution to the conflict is. And unless something kind of jars us away from that, or unless we slow down and really seek out to learn, we stay in that position and rarely move on to the needs. So sometimes just exploring more, opening the conversation so someone can tell you what they want. That idea of exploring for needs and really communicating is huge. So now I want to show you a picture. And just don't say what you see. Just keep in mind, and I'm going to ask you in just a minute. Okay, on the count of three, I want you to tell me what you saw. One, two, three.
Frog on a lily pod.
I thought I saw
a frog and a horse.
Part of a horse and a frog.
Okay, I'm hearing horse and I'm hearing frog. Which is it, folks?
Both.
Okay, so these three saw this picture. hand, you know, that way too. The others, I turned the picture and showed them this.
Oh. Looked like an upside down frog.
Okay, well, Jonah.
Oh, now I see it. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Jonah is an awesome example of this whole premise that once you see something and you know what it is, sometimes it's almost impossible to see the other perspective. It is a frog tipped over. You know, it's not a horse, it's just a frog tipped over. Now, occasionally, someone can see both, you know, viewpoints. But very often, what you see is what you stick with. And that idea of being open, recognizing, you know, there are two valid or multiple valid perspectives for something, I will seek out to know what someone else would be seeing. And then realize that you're probably holding a little bit of a bias for your own first view, rather than saying, well, you know, what is this like for you? Tell me. So I want us to give Jonah an opportunity now to present this. And should this be moved to the side, Jonah?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Should I take your seat?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
All right, so I've been a second grade teacher, and my name's Jonah. I do the media. I'm a library job here at Holden. I'm staying until next July. Last year I worked in a private school in Kirkland, Washington, small school, and I've done educating the last like 10 years, assistant, leave replacement roles, but all in elementary, substituting for a long time up in Bellingham, and kids and their emotions are just like us and our emotions, you know. I really feel like kids are just as intelligent as we are, but they might not know how to explain things as well. But you know, the intelligence is just looking for me. Okay, the intelligence is about seeing patterns, and I think kids can just as well see patterns as we can. And discover, you know, differences and things. All right, so a PE teacher might tell you their job, kids don't get as riled up than they do either at recess or in like competitive play and sports and competition. And I really enjoy seeing kids intensely feeling things because it's an opportunity for them to manage their emotions. So I loved seeing kids at recess. Kids already are wearing their heart on their shirt sleeve in terms of, you know, if they're happy, they're skipping, if they're sad, they're crying. And I love that about kids. It seems that as we get older, we inhibit and filter all that stuff. And I wish more people would be, you know, as open as kids are. All right, so the reason I'm talking about kids is this mediation thing that I did at the school I was working at, and it's called the Peace Path, and it's just a very concrete way for kids to stop, identify their, well, first they stop and they count to 10 in the beginning step. Let's see, how many steps are there? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the fifth step is together. I'll show you what these steps are. So, it's the Peace Path, and I think Kathy's motivating me. I should share it with the school. It's a very helpful way to concretely take steps to, you'll see, identify. All right, so calm yourself, count to 10. So, it's color-coded, and they're both doing the same steps, and this was just a laminated piece of paper, but we actually, after this, made stepping stones that we dyed and then wrote the words with these push letters on in the stones when they were hardening, and then they decorated the stones, and so we made it like a real nice fixture of the playground that people could go to. when they had conflicts. So the first one says, calm yourself, count to 10. This is the writing that would appear on the stone, the white part. So each person has to do that. And what I found was sometimes people aren't even ready to stand on the first one. It's just so apparent. It's so like, you know, they're not even ready to go. But that's okay too. And letting kids be aware that, you know, conflict's inevitable. This is something Kathy said, but like war's a choice. And so that conflict's okay, and emotions and being, you know, PO'd at people is totally okay and normal. And if you can't stand on it now, you know, fine, but maybe we can stand on it later. And it just makes it really apparent. So that's first one's calm yourself, count to 10. Then you go to yellow. This is another group. And then next one is just the I statement. Here it is, the yellow now, sorry. The yellow is what I wrote on the stone. I feel blank when blank. So that was written on the stone, that's the yellow stone. And I just gave an example, but I feel scared when you chase me. I feel upset when you won't play with me. Getting kids to be aware of their emotions is something you need to help kids with. And I think with some students with autism, experiencing and understanding emotions is a lot harder. And so sometimes like emojis help just recognize what am I feeling. That's a skill in and of itself that I think we take for granted, and sometimes maybe we don't know right off the bat, but after you've stopped, done a count to 10, you can identify what are you feeling, and then maybe why.
Is there an emoji chart out there on the playground?
No, but I did show this to the whole school. And I was thinking of making this a poster, but there are, yeah, there's like, I have these emojis.
Lots of them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's different things. And, you know, maybe they realize that they're tired because they stayed up playing video games or they had something late to do. And, you know, it's just helping teach them about their body and what they're feeling. So then they say, I feel blank when blank. Then next one is what Kathy called was like the bounce back statement. And this takes listening on your part to get to the next step, because you've got to restate what the person said and say their feeling and why they felt it. So I understand you feel upset when I won't play with you. I understand you feel scared when I chase you. Good. And it's very simple to give these examples. This definitely does take the need for like a facilitator, and for some, you know, the facilitator has to be flexible. And in your example, the facilitator can't be influencing, like, you know, saying, all right, well, the best solution is to cut that orange in half. Like, it should be pretty framework bare bones that the kids are doing it. But you'll see, when it comes to, like, solutions in the next couple steps, the kids should come up with them. Because then that's going to make them feel more satisfied and resolved, I think. And we won't have a grumpy chef.
Yeah.
So, the next stone, each person has to say, maybe we could try. And this is just some examples, but the kids could come up with other examples. But play a different game, take turns or share, use kind words and friendly voices, agree on rules together, be honest and tell the truth, be patient and play another time. And then I got these from this chart. I think it's called, there's so many things in schools use like behavior management charts. I think this is called Kelso It's this little frog that, it's like a national behavior system that schools get, but these are more solutions, but they're similar. Take turns. I like the use kind words and friendly voices, think or write about what I can do. And a lot of times kids, when they do get in trouble, they do have to actually write out a behavior thing. It gets to be a really like negative thing, but I think for some kids they need to just be stopped, and maybe they don't need to see the whole thing as a punishment, but it's important for them to develop that skill of thinking out things a little bit more. Maybe they have to sit down and write about it. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, some kids react really quickly and get just upset. We need to just reassure them that it's okay. All right, so maybe we can try talking to each other before we start a game. Maybe we can try playing a game other than chase. And then after they've done that, their last step, they stand on together and they say, we agree to try blank, and we shake hands. So I essentially just made these simple phrases and put them on the stones with the press letters, and so then they were all in like concrete, and the stones were out. I don't have a picture of the stones, but it worked. You can make garden stepping stone kits, and it was just a nice fixture to the school. And I had kids from kindergarten through fifth grade using it, not on a regular basis, but I think they understood that. The stopping, recognizing their emotions, then explaining it to the other person, listening to another person and what they wanted or felt, all that was important. And I think it just helps you train kids to be like less impulsive and maybe make situations worse sometimes. I mean, I've had kids have behavior or anger management issues where there's some reward systems where kids get tickets, and there was a fifth grader that he would swear, and I think he actually said the F word to me once, and he was really upset, and he would just get crazy, and he was fifth grade, but some kid was really making him mad, had his soccer ball or something, and I was watching him, and he was easy, quick to erupt, but the soccer ball was on the ground, and then all of a sudden, the kid just, another kid took his ball and just kicked it away, like just punted it far away. And I just saw the boiling up of this fifth grader just ready to do or say something. And then he stepped away and went somewhere and just yelled at the sky. And like, I was so happy that he was able to be aware and take it. Instead of making it worse, so I just gave him like a huge amount of tickets and stuff in that reward system. But it was just a great example of him recognizing his emotions, and so like I said, kids at recess or like PE, I think it's helpful for them to feel those intense emotions and then be able to stop and have some sort of step that they can do to calm themselves and think about things in a more proactive way than just maybe if they've learned throwing something back at somebody or calling them a name or anything like that. So that's basically it. So and yeah, we could print it out on a colored piece of paper and laminate the whole thing, or you can actually make it a concrete thing. Because the laminate thing I could use in a classroom, which was handy. I could just roll it out when kids had a disagreement, and you know, they'd kind of sigh because like it took work, but you know, it's too bad. I mean, so in any event, I thought of sharing that because Kathy and I were talking with a podcast yesterday in terms of the mediation and starting with the like next generation and passing off skills to help them not see war as just like some inevitable normal thing that that yes, conflict's normal, but choosing to just destroy the other side or go at it without using our brains to think of a more productive solution is it's a lot healthier and it makes us feel better. So.
Wow.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah.
Willing to share this for us to download it somewhere?
Yeah, I think it might be online. You could look it up. I made this form was called Prezi. It's a way to present. It's kind of like PowerPoint, but so this thing is this thing is online. I think you can look it up. Prezi is spelled P-R-E-Z-I. But Prezi and Pete's bet. I'll go double check. I might be just making up. But the peace path. There's different ways to it. But I think this is just. I simplified some of the wording so kids didn't have to. That it could fit on a stone. That was the biggest thing. So just a couple of summary. It's a tool to help people solve problems. Makes us cooperate and agree with each other. Helps turn sad feelings into happier feelings. Disagreements happen, everyone argues, everyone has conflicts with other people. Walking the peace path helps us develop good problem-solving habits because we have to answer important questions like, what am I feeling, or what is the other person feeling, or and those are the questions. Why are you feeling, or what are you feeling and why? What is the other person feeling and why? How can we act differently next time, and what do we agree to do?
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
And just think, they are using their bodies, they're using their minds, they're using what the passion within them because of that conflict that has just come up.
Right.
And it's, and then they're getting kudos from a teacher that's important to them for doing something so amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely takes an open mind facilitating it because kids can come at it from many different ways where you need to sort of flexibly route them into this step-by-step process. And so keeping the kids sort of invested in that step-by-step process and helping them see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and that they'll agree is important. But it does work, and it's pretty simple. So it helps when you get in arguments with like your spouse or your partner too. You could walk the peace path too.
That's way cool.
Yeah,
good application. Yeah. Could you imagine if that was part of our garden decor?
Right.
You can give a laminated sheet at for a wedding present.
Wedding present.
yeah, exactly. Right.
Very cool.
Josh, could I add a thought?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, comments, suggestions.
You know, after the third one, which was basically active listening, the fourth one, you could also say something like, what I would prefer.
Sure.
And that it makes it more personal. You know, the kid would then be actually saying what I'd prefer you would do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And also that works in marriage counseling. I do that a lot.
Okay.
Also, the other thing is when you're trying to get people to talk about feelings,
yes.
You got to be careful to watch that, you know, in other words, it's, I feel happy, I feel sad. I mean, that those are feelings. But what Americans tend to do is I feel like I feel like going down to the snack bar. Well, that's not a feeling, it's a thought, you know.
Yeah.
So if they say like after the, you know,
okay,
be careful. And also if they say that, I feel that what we should do is talk more. You know, it's not really a feel. It's
right.
Some, it may or may not, but it's usually not. So there's right. A couple of key words like and that after I feel that should be whoops, that's not a feeling.
Good. Yeah, that would be a helpful thing for the facilitator.
Right.
To be aware of those things. Yeah, no, and I just in doing this, found certain ways to be a little more flexible and aware of where it was going.
And it just helps. And in my experience with men, men have a harder time saying a feeling than they want to go down this road of, I feel like we should talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
That is so awesome.
Yeah. No, you've got me now ready to go to introduce it to the kids.
Just think what that's going to mean for them as a resource. So that is awesome. And I'll be in touch on how I can share your ideas.
Yep. Too. Well, and I appreciate you bringing all the children's books. Those are great ways to get kids seeing an issue and a problem and then talking about it.
Okay. I sense you made a couple of assumptions at the beginning that are really important. One is you're not blaming the kids for having feelings.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not blaming them?
Yeah. It's a no-fault position you come from.
Right.
And the other is that the kids don't choose those feelings. They just have them.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. No, and so, yeah, they will get down on themselves. I mean, they really can beat themselves up and be their worst enemy in terms of what the expectation is, but helping them know that it's a normal thing and that they don't need to already just go down a rabbit hole of despair and, you know, there's no construction or, you know, creativity possible after that.
It also teaches them to deal, you know, to work through their own feelings
with
people and solve their own problems so that the teachers don't have to get involved.
Right. No, that was the main, that I just wanted them to stop coming to me and just, here you guys go, you walk the peace path. Like, do it yourselves, kids.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Totally. Cool. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And I have heard more than once, many times. I haven't been able to stand her since third grade, or, you know, I hate him ever since this happened, you know, 2 years ago. And to think they walk the end of the peace path and here, you know, they're shaking hands, they're heroes to each other. So, well, I promised three exceedingly awesome life skills and conflict
resolution. That's why we're here.
Okay. So, beside those, you know, things of being willing to communicate and seeing different perspectives, I think there are three specific things. And the first one of them is that you are aware that a conflict is being felt within you, and you shift into problem solver mode. You say, okay, something's going on here. I need to be at my best. So I want to hear, and I believe this is, it's probably, well, Jonah said, count to calm and count to 10, or stop and count to 10, you know, first thing. So that was one, but everybody probably has their best way of shifting into, instead of reacting defensively in lashing out in reaction rather than purposeful action, when you do shift, you become very powerful because then all of your experience and wisdom is at hand. So I just want us to share our best ideas for shifting, and I'm going to write them down as you call them out.
You're asking for trouble.
Okay. Well, we'll hear, and right, maybe what you say, David, doesn't work for somebody else, but it may be the very thing that somebody
works for me.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
You personally?
Yeah, I'm telling myself.
Take a walk. One time, I took a hot shower when I was upset with my stepson. And after the hot shower, I was able to go talk to him about his language in a calm way.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it's that's not so specific, but it's that what I was thinking, but this is a version of the fight and flight, where part of the flight brain is reactive and the other part is thinking.
Okay, and so how
would
so
you use that? Well, I'm beginning to try to just to, for me, to see, okay, am I thinking or am I just reacting?
Okay.
So you know, you take off the fight and whatever it is, but am I thinking or am I just reacting to something?
However, it is time, you know. I mean, just I mean, like he said, you know, count to 10, whatever.
Or 20.
For me, 25. Time is in the moment. I'm not very good at that.
Yeah.
You know, but I need a little time.
Let me get back to you on that.
Yeah. Can we meet in a half an hour or something? You know.
Go out and chop wood.
Yeah. Get in the wood chain.
That'll work. Josh was a good helper in that. Wood chain.
Okay, a couple more ideas.
I just go to run.
Run, yeah.
Running,
yeah.
Take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
I like to meditate because I can concentrate, you know, and kind of close off those feelings for that moment when I really kind of need to gather myself together and then take 20 minutes to just sit in silence and then start thinking it through. What, how am I going to handle this? But it's usually just that stopping for a while and just kind of regaining who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Sit with that.
And all of this presumes that you are aware that something is happening for you, that you need to shift or be at your best. Because very often our tendency is just to, no way, you know, I mean, like, just to say it or react or something without that awareness of the breath. Or something, oh my gosh, this could be hard. I do classes in the juvenile detention center in Yamhill County, and it's really interesting for me to see, I think, how smart these kids are. I still haven't figured out what the missing piece is so that some of their amazing skills get lost in action, you know, and things go wrong. But so many of them are saying this. And they're saying, you know, we're assigned to counseling and they're teaching us mindfulness. And run, play basketball, turn on the music. Those things are what the kids are identifying as successful things. But for each of us, it just means making sure we know ourselves well enough to know what we have to do to shift. So that's very first thing. Second thing is the bounce back. And it sounds like we have people who have done all kinds of work in communication, and you would know it as paraphrasing. But working with the kids and working in mediation training, we simply call it the bounce back. We use a parrot as an emblem of this, just as an anchor tool, because the parrot is known for speaking ability, you know, Polly want a cracker, Polly want a cracker, pretty bird, pretty bird, pretty bird. And the kids are told never let your voice be squeaky, or, you know, sound like you're mimicking someone. But do recognize the power that people feel when someone reflects what they have said. So this is, well, listening is considered the top communication skill. I think most people would say that. The part of listening that really makes a difference is for someone to know that they've been heard. You know, because there are a whole lot of talk stoppers that you can be in conversation with someone and you can space out, you can interrupt, you can change the subject, you can defend yourself, you can explain why they're wrong and you're right. All of these things, the reaction is to shut down communication. There isn't a thing that I want to say next. When you bounce back, you open it for a reply, for a comment. So, Wayne has agreed to help me show some of the bounce back in what we would use in a family meetings workshop. And it just says, it's putting in your own words what you heard someone say. You can pick up a key word that they said, or if you don't know that, pick up the feeling that you think they are showing. But it's to sincerely put in your own words what they said. And again, at the Juvenile Detention Center, more than once, a young person would say, Kathy, if I tried that with my mom, she would say, you sassing me? You know, didn't you hear what I just said? You know, and I say, just borrow my faith, borrow my belief in this, and make sure you never use it if you're not sincere, if you don't really care about understanding them better. Because that's the first thing. If you are just echoing a technique, it's not going to work. But I suggest they say, in juvie, we practice something called bounce back. And it was to help us be able to listen without, you know, getting irate and without storming off. And I really do want to know, Mom, what's going on for you. So can I try it? And so with that kind of sincerity, they'll agree, we'll give it a try. So we'll show you some of the circumstances that what a bounce back would be like.
Yeah, I really thought Joe and I were going to win the three-legged race. We practiced for a whole week, but today was the race. We started off so fast, we fell down, and we came in last.
I could say, oh, well, there's always next year. Forget it, it was just a race. But how might he feel then?
You never care about me, do you?
Okay, let's rerun that and see what a bounce back could do.
I really thought Joe and I were going to win that three-legged race. We practiced for a whole week, but today was the race. We started off so fast, we fell down, we came in last.
Oh gosh, you really hoped you were going to win that race? And in fact, you practiced a whole week for it?
Yeah.
Sounds like you were pretty disappointed to fall down.
I really was. We both were. I think we got nervous. Oh well, I guess it's just a race.
So you feel the difference in results when you really, you know, no big deal. Get over it. Okay, let's do another one. At a Christmas wreath-making gathering, and several of these examples have a substance in reality.
There's nobody my age in this whole building.
Don't worry, I did this last year. It's easy, it'll be fun.
For you, maybe. I'm not doing it.
Okay, a bounce back? Let's rerun it.
Look, there's nobody my age in this whole building.
So you were hoping there'd be kids your age?
Well, yeah. I don't know anybody here. I don't know how to make a wreath. It's stupid.
So you worried you might not know how to do it?
Well, yeah, a little.
Do you want me to show you? We could start one together.
Well, okay.
So, yeah. Let's try a conversation with Dad and the team setting up to make apple cider, which the Beckwiths love to do.
So I have it marked that I'm doing the second one, am I?
No, we decided we'd do the other way.
Okay. Do you want to start picking the apples?
No, I don't even want to make dumb cider.
Where'd that come from? You like to make cider. But if you're going to be stubborn, just go in your room. We'll do it without you this year.
Fine with me.
My not so good.
And, yeah. And it's not dumb cider either.
Okay, let's rerun it with a bounce back.
The buckets are over here. Do you want to start picking up apples?
No, I don't even want to make dumb cider.
Oh, sounds like you're not quite in the mood for this.
Right there, an opening for more conversation. No, I thought we were going to the movie, and then you just totally cancel that and decide this is a good time to do cider without even asking me. And now the movie's already started, and I know you won't let us go, so I'm stuck here.
Trapped. And not what you planned at all.
No, it's not fair.
I see what you mean. I did change the plans here, and I didn't realize how important it was to you. I want to see the movie, too. How about we see it tomorrow night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. How many apples do we need? So, I want to try some with you. Welcome.
I'm sorry, Lily. Really. Yeah, but I wanted to at least come for part.
Okay, and so how I use the parrot is that if somebody indicates I'm willing to try a bounce back, I'll just throw it to you. You hold it for the confidence it gives you, and then you can toss it back to me. So, I had a rotten day at school. My teacher doesn't like me. I could say, well, what'd you do today? Or I could bounce back. So will someone be willing to try the bounce back? Okay, Neil. I had a rotten day at school. My teacher doesn't even like me.
What happened?
She's just mean.
I'm sorry. What did do you know why she...
I don't know why. She just doesn't like me, and it's no fun. I don't want to go back to school. Okay, now, Neil, before you try to pull out more, just show me that you've heard what I say.
Right.
Choose a couple of words, maybe even that I've used, so that you're bouncing back in your words what you heard me say. So I know you're not going to fix it for me. You're just going to bounce back.
Okay, I can tell
I you. Had a horrible day. School was rotten today. My teacher was really mean. She doesn't like me.
What happened?
I don't know what happened. She just told me I didn't bring my paper.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry.
Okay, now at that point I would say I feel the empathy and I didn't feel criticism, but could you use in there something about what you heard me say about my day at school?
Okay, I'm a good
demonstrator.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to use rotten day or if you want to put it in your own words,
yeah.
But how could you reflect back what you heard me say about the kind of day I had and maybe what
it was really did. Horrible, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Now I know you're listening.
Yeah.
So just to say it was really horrible,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
And that took the that I know we can go on now. Your trust, I mean, I can trust you because you're not saying well.
Putting it off or something. You're
okay.
Feeling really sad that your teacher may not like you.
Yeah. I know, I thought she did like me. Oh, and how I feel there, because it's hitting at something that's important to me. My teacher's upset.
You're worried that she may not like you at all.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know if she even wants me to come to school.
So there's a lot of sadness about that.
Yeah. I think she'll like me better when I bring my paper back.
Good.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay, here's another one. I don't want to go to the store. Well, unhelpful. You're going anyway. Get in the car. Okay, end of conversation. You don't know, are you going to be physically having to carry that kid, try to get them into their seatbelt, or if you bounce back, what might the conversation do? So somebody, I'm going to say that again, and I want you to bounce back what you're hearing. Linda, you're just here. Do you want to take
sure,
the paradigm?
Sure, okay. If I can. Oh, I can't catch the word though.
I don't want to go to the store. I'm not going.
Oh, you seem frustrated. I'm not sure what. Tell me what's underneath that. Why do you not feel like going to the store?
Yeah. Okay, right there, the very first thing she did, so you're feeling frustrated?
Like
so even
sure,
without
yeah.
bouncing back, you don't want to go to the store. She bounced back my feelings. And that's all I needed to know that we're going to have a conversation. So, yeah. And sometimes you won't, I mean, you would probably almost rather bounce back the feelings because that's the heart of, you know, what they're doing. It really looks like you're sad and you're feeling.
You really want to avoid why questions, though, unless you're a police officer. So, you know, because it puts people on the defensive. So you try to stay away from why.
Well, like, tell me about.
Yeah, tell me about
it.
Help me understand.
Help me understand, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a neat little formula that professional counselors use all the time that'll really help people here. And the formula, maybe you mentioned when I went to the restroom, but.
Oh, let's say I did. But just reinforce it.
So it's a really simple formula. Everyone here can memorize it. You're feeling blank about blank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
yeah,
feeling
that's
blank
a guess,
about blank.
Too. That's, you have to be careful because if you miss.
Well,
yeah,
in
you're
the tradition.
Yes, but at least you're showing that you're wanting to know. And then they may say, no, I feel more angry than frustrated or whatever. And then you're going to hear that.
And especially if at the end of that you can add, is that right? Or did I
yeah,
really
that
mean
right?
that? Did I get that right?
Usually if you do it correctly, you're feeling blank about blank. You'll see the person's head go up and down. If their person's head to go this way, of course, maybe
yeah.
you missed. Try something different, you know.
And, you know, with communication workshops that cover paraphrasing, it's the most normally, so what I hear you saying is. And people have told me many, many times, when I hear someone say that, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're using a technique on me. I am not interested at all in what they're going to say or whatever.
So what you do is you just change the wording. Sounds like I hear you saying. You know, obviously if you're just a parrot, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But you have to show that you truly have empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I hear my husband say, so what I hear you saying is that when you got in the car and saw it was on E, and you were headed into Portland, that really brought up some, you know, and I say,
never had that experience.
You, I'm sure.
And I say, I don't care if that's some technique. When I hear him say that, I love this man. And just think, gosh, thank you for knowing, for being willing to bounce back what this is like for me. So don't shortchange yourself if that's all that comes to mind, but using, just tweaking the words a little bit. Okay.
Especially if you'll volunteer to go to the gas station first.
Let me run over to, well, and that's a problem. The gas station locally closes early, so. Okay, I have two more just to make sure that that's anchored, because for me, this is one thing, I mean, the kids in mediation know the bounce back is their primary skill. And in family meetings, it's just built right into the thing. So bounce back, I just believe, is the heart of it. It helps you. If you do none of these, and you hear somebody come at you with a criticism, and you bounce back, you have already remembered, I need to shift. Something's coming at me. So I'm just going to bounce back and see where it'll let the conversation go. So even just knowing that one thing, I will use a bounce back, I will bounce back, I will bounce back, and I'll be sincere, I'll really mean it. Sunday school just doesn't seem fun this year, I could say. I'm sure your teacher has put in a lot of work. Just give it some time. You're probably just missing your old teacher from last year. Well, I'm not going. Okay. Sunday school just doesn't seem very fun this year.
Somebody? Sounds to me like you're not enjoying Sunday school.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know anybody. The kids that I thought would be there from last year, they aren't there. They put them in a different class, I guess. So just that was a beautiful bounce back, and I didn't even give you a chance to appear. Thank you. Did I get your name? Could you?
I'm Corky.
Corky. Thank you. And one more. Why did they give me socks for a birthday present? I hate socks. Unhelpful. Socks are a great present. We all need socks. Now get busy and write that thank you note.
Yikes.
Yeah. Okay, why did they give me socks for a birthday present? I hate socks.
You hate socks.
Yeah. And just even that, David, yeah, I do. Somebody told me they were going to get me this toy I wanted. And
so you didn't get it.
I didn't. And I don't know. I don't think I have enough money for it. You know, you let the conversation open just by reflecting that.
Or asking them what they thought they might be getting.
Yeah. At that point, once they feel you're open to hearing from them and you really identify with what they're doing, you can take the conversation wherever you want. And sometimes it's an apology, like the dad saying, I know I said we'd go to the movie, and I did just switch and say this was the time for cider. But I'm sorry, can we, you know, and then they're into problem solving. Can we go tomorrow night? Whatever. So that's number two, and I dance on the tabletop for bounce backs because it's just that important.
I've found the one word that I use in that situation all the time. Ouch.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. That's just true. Saying I feel what that would be like. Yeah.
That's true.
Thanks. So, skill number...
Challenging part of this is when your first reaction is an immediate reaction. It's reacting to what they said as opposed to a bounce back to what they said. And then you're in a recovery mode. Mm. Because now you've already shut them down.
Exactly. And boy, it's a lot bigger problem than, you know, you don't care about me. I'm not going to write this letter, this thank you note, you know, whatever. It's like, I'm my own person, you know, you don't even know what it's like for me.
And between couples, that's the big problem, because most of the time they're not listening. They're already upset and they're thinking of what they're going to say back. And so,
as soon as couples, it's siblings and all kinds of others.
Yeah.
As soon as you don't do that, and instead you listen and, you know, paraphrase back, right away it changes the whole circumstances. You know, I mean, it just dramatically changes.
Yeah. And that point of you're planning what you're saying next, so you're not in the bounce
right.
back. I mean, it's like, okay, I'm waiting for them to take a breath, and I'm going to tell them exactly what they need to know.
You're clearly not using a fear-fighting model.
Yeah, thanks.
I just find that, particularly with siblings, you have this sort of process ingrained since you were very young, where it just escalates.
Mm.
And then usually mom or dad intervenes. And
yeah.
But it's now trained in, and it lasts forever.
Yeah.
Well, I just. A word that you say.
Do you just remember the Smothers Brothers?
Oh,
yeah. Mother love.
Well, just think. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, we call that already always listening. In other words, you already have heard the answer before, you know, so you're already always listening. So you're responding to what you think they're going to say instead of stopping and doing the bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just imagine if kids like that grew up in Jonah's school where there was an automatic process that they go to that stepping stone part of, mm-hmm. and they reflect that. That might offset some of the natural. So as we move on, I also want us to frog and horse, look at this, which is a little treasure. Annette and Neil and Wayne and I shared the experience of working up in the hills from this temple in Madurai. And one of the things I saw, there was a picture that I thought, oh my gosh, these people are onto something. I came back to the school and said to one of the art instructors, would you help me make a batik that would show that? Because it's a message they wanted people coming into the temple to understand. Is this a bullock in front of the elephant with his head back and his, you know, horns tipped? Or is this an elephant standing in front of the bullock? And just the idea that, again, when you see it one way, it's sometimes kind of hard to draw out the other view. If that's an elephant and its trunk is over there, that's different than if it's the bullock kind of rearing its head back in front of the elephant. So remember, perspectives differ, viewpoints differ, and that doesn't mean that one is right and one is wrong. It's just it comes from our life experience.
Yeah, the classic one is the candlestick.
Yeah, yeah, with the faces.
The two faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So skill number three. Well, first, what is skill number one? Shift. Skill number two, listen through the bounce back. Skill number three, find your process. Find your plan. And I thought, people do that now. We used to, when we would travel, we'd make sure we had a map. And, you know, roll it out, see where we're going, whatever, make our plan. Now, I always run to the computer and MapQuest. We don't have the fancy phones that talk us through. But, you know, my sister was taking me to McCall, Idaho. And she says, Suri, could you tell us from this point how we get to McCall? And Suri says, yes, Darlene, you will turn at exit, blah, 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 you know, whatever. So, and, you know, the kids are on Google Maps and everything. So we have a plan for something. It's easy as where we're going next. How many of us have a plan for our families, for our relationship with our, you know, partner or spouse, in our schools, in Holden Village? What is our plan for problem solving? Because, as Jonah was saying, conflict is inevitable. It's a part of life. Letting conflict destroy your relationship is a choice. So having the plan. And, you know, I will look forward to hearing more plans, but I want to share with you two really sweet ones that work and help people grow up knowing these skills. So I need four readers who would volunteer. This is a family meeting role play, and it's called A Soaking Wet Cat, A Very Sad Kid, and an I Already Said No Dad. Okay? David, you're one of the kids, Chris. And Quirky, you're Kelly, the other child. I need a dad and a mom.
You can read them.
Okay, you're the dad. And I need a mom.
I'll be the mom.
Okay. So just a little thing on reading. Always use a little volume up so it's really comfortable for everyone to hear. And we will just work this. This follows through the process of a family meeting that starts in a specific way. Announcements, compliments, agenda items. And you'll see by hearing how it goes, you know, how this meeting unfolds. And by the way, there's going to be no solution to this. Don't expect it, because one of these kids is already in tears and dad is already adamant. Anyway, let's go. Mom is the facilitator for the family meeting this time.
Welcome to the family meeting. Thank you all for coming. I know today was a busy day, and I think it's great that we're all here. I signed up for facilitator this time, and I see that Kelly signed up as recorder, and Dad signed up for refreshments. Thanks. I want to open the meeting with time for compliments. Who would like to begin by sharing a compliment about someone or for someone in the family?
I will. I want to compliment Mom for the awesome zucchini bread she made out of that giant zucchini, like we planted last week, or like we planned last week. I took a loaf of it to Sue next door, and she called my cell today to tell me it was the best zucchini she'd ever had. I agree with her. Nice work, Mom.
Thanks, Kelly.
I'd like to compliment Kelly for being a cool brother. I had a pretty awful day yesterday, and he asked me what was wrong and brought me a glass of ice water just to be nice.
Thank you.
I'd also like to compliment Dad for helping me fix the puncture in my bike, too. That was the first time I ever had that happen. I'm not sure I could fix it on my own again, but maybe if Dad helps me one more time, I'll get it. You're a good teacher at home, Dad, besides at school.
Thanks. You did a good job at that, too. You kept your cool when the patch didn't hold, and we had to do it over.
I'd like to compliment all three of you for helping out on the nature trail cleanup. You were such good sports when it started pouring down rain. You could have easily blamed me for getting us into that, but you all just laughed about it. I really like our family.
It helped a little to know that we got hot fudge sundaes on the
way. Yeah, I like that plan, too.
Are there any other compliments? Okay, then are there any announcements?
I finished my book project for school today.
Super! Other announcements? Then let's begin with the agenda. I see we have one item for today. Cat inside. Would the person who put that on the agenda explain their concern?
That was me.
Go ahead.
I know I said I wouldn't bring Katie inside when you guys said I could get a cat, but I need to change my mind. I've changed my mind. I wanted to come inside the house.
Well, that's easily solved. It's not going to happen. A deal is a deal, and that's what you agreed to. End of discussion.
Chris puts head down on table, discouraged, ready to cry.
I thought family meetings were a place where we could talk out our problems. Chris won't really get to talk about why that's on the agenda if it's the end of the discussion. I thought we were supposed to bounce back for the person who talks.
Okay, freeze role play for just a minute. That is amazing courage that a kid took at a family, because Dad was the one who said end of discussion. But a family meeting has empowered a young person to at least know we have a plan and the comment. Would you read your last line again, Clarky?
I thought we were supposed to bounce back for the person who talks.
Thanks. Go ahead, resume role play.
Thanks for that reminder, Kelly. Kelly, would you be willing to bounce back for both Chris and Dad so we make sure we've understood them?
Sure, I guess so. Chris said he knows that Katie isn't supposed to come into the house, and that was the agreement worked out in order to get a cat. But now he is thinking it would be good to have Katie in the house after all. He has changed his mind. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, but I can see it doesn't matter what I think.
It is important for us to know what you think, Chris. We'll get back to you in just a minute so you can tell us more.
And Dad said that this was already decided when we first worked out the plan for Chris getting a cat. Katie's an outside cat, and Chris agreed to that. And Dad doesn't think we need to go over it again. Did I understand right, Dad?
Exactly. Like I said, a deal is a deal. It made sense then, and it makes sense now.
Well, Chris, you said you've changed your mind. Could you say a little more about that?
Yeah. When Aunt Jenny offered to give us one of her kittens, I was so excited about having Katie that I didn't mind keeping her outside. It was summer then. We had a lot of things we could do and places we could be together. But winter's coming. It's already raining a lot. A lot. That makes way different than I thought it would be. It seems like it's always raining. No place to be with Katie that I don't get soaking wet. Even the porch doesn't have a dry place, and I can't crawl under the house to stay dry like Katie does. I need to let her inside, please. People change their minds sometimes, and other people should listen to them.
So you think I don't listen?
Could we just wait a minute? I'd like to give Dad a chance to bounce back what Chris just said.
Well, Chris said the summer was a great time for a new cat. Lots of places to play and things to do outside. But when the rain started, it hasn't been so fun. It seems like there isn't any place to be with Katie and still stay dry unless it's under the house, which might be a little tricky. Chris also said that sometimes people change their minds, and it's nice when people listen to each other.
Did Dad seem to hear what you said, Chris?
Yeah, except I also said, please, Dad, let Katie inside. I don't think Mom or Kelly, either one, would care. It's just you. Because of what you said about the cat that had fleas. But Katie doesn't have fleas. She can learn to use a litter box.
So let's summarize. Let me summarize for us. Katie's remembering what Dad said last summer about the neighbors having to fumigate their house because they found fleas everywhere. Dad said he didn't want that to happen in our own home and just didn't like the idea of cat pooping in the house. Chris didn't think it would be a problem to have Katie outside, but has found that, with all the rain this fall, there isn't a place for her to be, him to be, with his cat and stay dry. He has brought his concern to our family meeting to see if together we can help work out a solution that works for everyone. Why don't we start doing some brainstorming now? Kelly, will you remind us of all your brainstorming rules?
Sure. Any serious idea is written down. No trashing any idea when it's given, even if you don't like it. We go back and evaluate them later. Remember that one idea can spark another that might really work.
Thanks, Kelly. Who would like to begin by giving an idea they think might work?
I will. Ideas, let Katie come inside the house.
I got it down.
Someone else?
Or I could say, let Katie come inside the house, but stay in my room.
What other ideas might work to help Dad feel comfortable, too?
Build a little playhouse for Chris and Katie outside so they can get out of the rain together. That would be fun for other reasons, too.
And expensive. Oh, yeah. I'm not supposed to criticize ideas yet. Sorry.
We already have the storage shed. Maybe we could use it.
If you don't mind being out there with the mice... Mice. Hey, we have something here. It drives me crazy to open up a box and find evidence of mice. I wonder if having Katie in there from time to time would scare them off.
I'll put that down. Katie, go in the storage shed.
That could be good. That corner behind the extra fridge could be a nice place for us to play together. I could make it into Katie's cat corner.
Let's look at what we have. Kelly, could you read the list?
Katie, come inside the house. Katie, come inside, but stay in Chris's room. Build a playhouse. Let Katie in the storage shed. Chris made Katie a cat corner.
Are there some ideas that everyone thinks will work?
Well, I wouldn't mind saving for a playhouse that we could all build next summer, but that won't solve anything for now. I like the storage shed idea.
Me too.
Sounds good to me.
The red footstool that I have in the Goodwill box might fit perfectly in the corner. Do you think Katie would take to the storage shed?
Well, Chris and I could make a cat door so she could come and go as she wishes.
Sweet, Dad. Thanks. Can we do it today?
Works for me.
Kelly, could you read what we've all agreed to?
Family meeting. September 20th. 2018. We agree that we'll let Katie in the storage shed. Chris will make a cat corner. Chris and Dad will make a cat door today.
But first, refreshments. And a big thanks to all of us. We started with a problem that didn't seem to have any solution. We ended up with an idea that no one had thought of earlier, but everybody likes. I'd say that was good listening, good brainstorming, and good problem solving. Nice work. And I think I see refreshments ready on the counter.
Popcorn and fruit leather. I made it myself tonight.
Nice, Dad.
Thanks, Dad.
Good job.
Yeah, good job, you guys.
I made a good letter.
Good on-the-spot reading of his letter. No, that, thank you, because I think it's so logical to think there's no solution for this. And the compliance rate with family meetings that involve kids in the discussion is huge. David, would you read this, just that first paragraph there?
The large one?
Yes.
The first one, huh? When the parent persona looms too large and too authoritative, our children cannot see us for the people we are. This is not to say that we should relinquish our authority. It simply means when children see us as fellow human beings, we stand together on common ground and they are better able to identify with us. As fellow human beings, we too make mistakes, apologize, and by asking them to forgive us, they grasp what it means to be a human being. Now our actions resonate with them. Considering children fellow human beings will demonstrate their role in their family and in society. They will share the responsibilities of the household, not because we order them to do so, but because as fellow human beings, they stand beside us and share the burden. They will learn the meaning of cooperation instead of obedience and gain a realistic introduction to their future lives in society. As fellow human beings, we enjoy mutual respect, shared human rights, and mutual regard one for another. No more the lopsided relationship where parents are the main givers and the children the takers. Now we give them ample opportunity to give of themselves.
Thank you, David. So that thing of really showing young people respect through treating them as a member of the family, and I think, though this may be now applying to roommates or housemates or spouses, the idea for me, probably that thing that helps me shift, I would have to say, is put it on the agenda. You know, because I know we're going to have a family meeting. I know we're both going to be at our best in problem solving. And I also know we're going to come up with a solution that works over and over and over again. It does. So there's huge power in that. And I would say too, being advocates for young families that are saying, what do we do? It's getting hard with the kids. Encourage them to check out family meetings. For a while, the extension service of universities, of the ag universities, had, and I don't know if they still do, when we were doing the training, I got materials from them and included it in. So they were just saying there is power in families doing family meetings, and so that it's out there and the stuff's on the internet so that it can be done. Another process or way of dealing that I think is in that third skill is mediation. So many communities now have mediation that when we come up with a problem, it's available to us. And if people come to us with a problem, I had a woman recently say, my adult daughter and I are not getting along. I think I got in a really bad habit of, saying that I would give her so much, a month to help support, and it's not working. And, so for me, instead of thinking that I had to, not had to, that it would even be best for me to work with her, I said, your community mediators of Yamhill County does things just like that. They'll talk to your daughter, they'll get it, worked out so that you'll have a time and place to talk with someone to help guide the conversation. But just like Jonah was saying, starting this when kids are little so that they know when you start school, you have a what you do at school when you just can't, I mean, yeah, you have the Kelso's Choices wheel and you can come up with things. Or, I mean, for them, maybe the peace path is the way. But I think also how powerful it is to have a mediation program. You have kids that grow up knowing the skills of a mediator. They can move right into community mediation. They can move into adult mediation. I have had kids that they recognize me easily. They've changed a lot from when I see them in grade school. But they say, Kathy, you can't imagine. I think I got this job, you know, as coordinator of the MAC rec, Parks and Rec, some division of it, because I could put down I was a mediator. And yeah, this is the work that I do as an RA at college, and it's come in handy so many times. So things that they learn as little kids, awesome. I want us to read what happens with Joe and Sam. This is out of a book. Actually, this book is in the process of getting published. I just made these up so that I could give my mediators, when they leave the program, could give them a thank you for the work that they do. These are all, there are like 4.5, I call it, mediations in here that are true stories of mediations that really happen. Names are changed, so because we protect confidentiality of the kids, they're the ones that get to decide whether they tell it. But it tells a story that really happened that I think is startling for adults. So I need a narrator who would kind of also fit in as the coach of the session. And I have two mediators and two parties in conflict. So David, you didn't get to read last time, so maybe you could be narrator. Mediator? Neil, you want to be a mediator?
Sure,
you're Tony.
Okay.
Annette, you want to be Kat?
Sure.
Wayne, Sam. And Joe, somebody that read last time still. I need one more reader. Okay. And this is chapter one. So just go ahead and move ahead to... the chapter one, the skill of intimidation. And I'm guessing probably...
Well, just start.
Yeah, probably Sam just starts it. And I will say, in the book, there is a mediation request form that says, Party A and Party B, Sam and Joe, mediators Tony and Tad, and there were no special requests for this one. Okay, so you are
Sam,
and who is Joe? Okay, Joe. So these are the two kids that have the conflict. These are the two mediators, and David's going to read the part that will, you know, fold it together. And okay, so Sam, go ahead.
He wrecks the game. He used to be fun to play basketball, but now I hate it. I hate him. He's mean.
The mediators hadn't expected Sam to use such strong words, but for some reason, neither one of them called him on the rules.
So basketball isn't much fun for you anymore, and you're really ticked off?
Yeah, and I doubt this mediation is going to change anything.
Joe, what can you tell us about the problem?
Hey, nobody's begging him to play. If he doesn't like the game, he can just do something else. We don't need him anyway.
Tad wondered if Tony could read his mind. How the heck are we going to get any solution to this mess? But Tony had already started his bounce back.
So you think there are plenty of players and people who don't want to play have other things they can do?
Sure, we have other things we can do. But that's not the point. The point is, I shouldn't have to listen to this jerk call me names when all I want to do is have fun playing basketball. And he does it all the time.
Tad turned in his chair and, without saying anything to Sam, pointed to the second rule of the chart behind him. No name calling.
Okay, but why is it okay for him to call me names?
Joe was quiet as Sam told his story.
I take the ball in, I dribble.
I shoot, I do anything. And he's there in front of me, pressing me hard and saying, come on, fat boy, you can't play. You stink at basketball. Miss it, fat boy. And if it's not fat boy, he's calling me hot shot or vomit. And I thought we had no put downs at this school, but I guess not.
Tad wondered if Sam was making up some of this, but he didn't say anything. Joe rode Tad's bus, and although they didn't know each other well, Tad had never seen him act mean to anyone on the bus. Then again, Sam seemed pretty convincing.
What's it like for you when that happens?
Tad asked Sam.
It's no fun. I hate it.
Joe, has anything like that ever happened to you?
A couple of times in Parks and Rec basketball. Another boy on our team was using the skill of intimidation on me.
What do you mean?
That's what my coach calls it.
I still don't get it. What's the skill of intimidation?
Well, that's when you get up close and you talk them down. Intimidate them so they get frustrated and lose the ball or think they can't do it.
Sounds like put downs to me. I don't know why anyone would call that a skill.
I don't actually like doing it. Not at Parks and Rec, and especially not at school.
Then he told the mediators.
Sam used to be a friend, and it's kind of messed things up for us.
So, it hasn't helped your friendship? What was it like for you when it happened at Parks and Rec?
Not fun. It made me mad. I didn't like the kid for a long time.
If you were Sam, how do you think you'd feel?
Mad. I think it was mean.
Tad decided to summarize.
So it sounds like you both like to play basketball and that you both had people put you down or make fun of you while you're playing and nobody likes it. Is there anything else you could tell us about this before we start looking for solutions?
I guess I'd like to say I'm sorry.
Joe turned to Sam.
Besides, you're a good player, for real.
Thanks.
It was quiet then, so Tony explained how brainstorming works.
You tell us ideas that might solve the problem. We write them down. Then we go back over them one by one and help you decide which ones you think will really work.
Joe gave the first idea.
I could give up the skill of intimidation.
Tony wrote fast as the two boys called out their ideas. Joe and Sam walked out of the mediation room that morning with signed agreement forms in their hand. But after lunch that day, their hands were free for a good game of basketball.
So do I read the...
Yeah, go ahead, okay.
We agree to the following. Joe gives up the skill of intimidation at school. Joe apologizes to Sam. Done. Both relax and calm down. Remember, it's for fun, not a real game.
Sam stops throwing the basketball at the fence to get even with Joe. No threatening to fight. Sam asks advice from Joe when he sees something he wants to learn.
So I was coach for that mediation, and I thought, oh my gosh, look what was boiling and just causing turmoil in these two kids' lives. And for the fact, I mean, it was really sad that there was a coach in Parks and Rec that told the kids to do that. But it happened. And the stories are absolutely, amazing. The conflicts that the kids are in, the creativity of their ideas to resolve them, and that they walk out with these agreements. You know, copies, we use that NCR paper that gives multiple copies. Mm-hmm. It costs 25 cents to get those printed. And I thought, what a good investment for the school to make. 25 cents for kids to come sit in at a table, mediators to help kids in conflict work out a problem. And it doesn't have to stop there. You know, it moves on up to junior high if the school chooses, to high school if the school chooses, and then into the community. And to have these young people, like, you know, Jonah was saying, be believers that conflict does not have to be resolved with a fight or a gun, you know, or a war. It's just a way of saying the very same skills that I know we could use at home in our family meetings worked here. So those are examples of two processes. I do want you to have an experience of mediation and see how it works for you. Annette and I have prepped a little ahead on a conflict, and I will give you, I mean, this isn't quite fair because mediation runs anywhere from a 40-hour training to school mediation being at least 2 days training. So here's a little sheet, questions that might help in mediation. And we're not gonna, you know, do a full mediation training, but I think you'll see how it works by the involvement in the mediators trying to do something for the parties. Mediation is at least the model we use at school, is like, do you all want to get up and stretch just a little bit before we
start? Yeah, give us a couple.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just take a little break and then we'll come back and you are the mediators.
Cookie, are you the one that was hiking yesterday or the day before and got back?
We didn't get back late.
Oh, you didn't?
Somebody misread what we wrote on the board.
Oh, because they announced it. Are they back? And they said no.
How many questions have you gotten?
Yeah, how many people have asked you that?
Not many.
Oh. Because, that's good.
Because his wife actually went and told them after the meeting that they aren't supposed to be back till tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, really?
So, no, they're not back, and they're not supposed to be back.
So if they came back, there's a mistake.
Yeah. We did.
They misread the checkout. Oh, okay. Yeah, they didn't seem.
There was a
staying overnight.
There, if something had gone wrong, we might have come back. But our plan was originally to spend 2 nights.
Hmm.
Where did you go?
Were you camping?
Image Lake. Yeah, we went up to Lyman Lake, and then hiked from there to Image Lake and back, and then came out from Lyman Lake.
Yeah.
Cool.
You weren't up to doing, 36 miles in one day?
You barely have to do it in three. That's
right. Wow.
You know, like these kids on the BCT, one was saying, I'm only 2 days from Canada. I said, well, how far is it? It's like 80-some miles. Like, oh, okay. Well, that would be more than 2 days for me.
They've been at it since April.
Yeah, they've got a lot of practice under the belt.
Good shape.
But it sure was beautiful out there.
Yeah, we didn't even get our rain yet today. We're supposed to get it. Well, they're talking about rain.
They talk about rain a lot around here.
We talk about it.
It's getting a little more chilly, isn't it?
put on your cap?
Oh, I know I can do it. I'm just looking outside. It
looks like it's getting a little more overcast.
The weather's changing.
Yeah. Well, at least we've got two more days of sunshine.
Forever?
I don't look that way at all.
The mediation model that we use, is a four-step process. After you do an opening and welcoming them in, telling them what it's going to be, what's going to happen, and some guidelines for the mediation. The first step is just getting a little idea of the problem and having the mediator bounce back for them so that they gain confidence that you're going to be neutral. You're going to help both of them. You don't get into it very much, but in step two, that's the heart of the mediation. And partway through, you can think, gosh, these people came in, at least they were civil somewhat, and now it seems like they're pretty upset because we're getting them to tell the story over. It's as if they're wearing a mask that keeps them from seeing each other in the best light, certainly, but it also keeps them from seeing the problem clearly and certainly from seeing any solutions that could be good for both of us. That mask is a barrier of all the emotions, often hopelessness, that there's no solution to this. Somebody told me try mediation, so okay, I'll do it. Step three is when these masks are lifted off, they see each other clearly, they see solutions start coming. It's so fun. People are brainstorming ideas, and then step four is writing the agreement and then bidding them farewell and wishing them well. So we're going to start with these masks on. Your role is not to help us get to the solutions, but just to work us through step one and step two and see what it's like. Now, some of the questions you can just, you know, part of this is to get us, we may not have talked a lot with each other, but when you ask one of us a question, we're going to hear what the other person is saying, and so we're going to understand it a little better. Now, I was going to have Neil keep track, but I think it'd be better if you can all just be involved, but I'll tell you what he was going to keep track of. Is this okay, Neil, if I just change that tally thing? And
okay.
So the idea was that he would tally any time you ask me something or bounce back for me. He would also tally when you're doing it for Annette, so that you could see if you're keeping a pretty good balance. Mm. Because if the mediators end up, you know, believing my story is the most important and you really want to work with me and whatever, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is good, and she's sitting there thinking, fine, you know, why did I even bother to come? So try to keep that in perspective. If somebody asks one of us a question, keep in mind that maybe you need to ask the other person. The other thing that's really hard about this, it's much harder than just working with your co-mediator, because you may be ready to ask a question and somebody will take it in another direction. Just kind of go with it, and then you'll have a chance to get back to your question then. Also, the tendency could be when you see that it's kind of loosening up things, just to go on, and maybe three or four questions in a row, try to pull yourself back in and let somebody else have an opportunity so we all get the feel for it. I would like to make sure you each do at least one mediator, you know, work here of either asking a question, summarizing, bouncing back, you know, having us put in our words what the other one just said. And feel free just to read off that sheet because those questions do work. And certainly, if you have another question that's not even on that sheet, but you think, you know, if we could understand this, that would really help. The other thing I will warn you, do not give us any ideas. That's not the mediator's work. After the masks are off, if we were going on with the role play, you would say, what ideas would you like us to record? You know, what things do you think you'd like to try? But if there's anything that can shut parties down, it is having the mediator start, well, don't you think you should? Or, well, haven't you tried that? You know, giving them advice. The problem is ours. We are here because we can't, well, yeah, I know what to do. It's pretty easy, but gosh, it isn't what I thought. I'm Kathy, this is Annette. You're the mediators. Start with step one and let's see if you can, oh yeah, these masks, if you say something or do something that helps us see the situation more clearly or each other, we're gonna lift the masks a little bit. Our goal, your goal, and our goal is to have these masks off. Now, I will say, you may say something, and the mask were up here, and you're thinking, oh, we're getting close, and suddenly, it's back down. That doesn't mean you did anything wrong. That may mean that part of the mediation process can bring out feelings and antagonism that just pulls us down, and you have to work a little harder to get it off. So, go ahead.
Would like to tell us what this is about? Either one of you?
Well, things haven't worked out quite the way that we thought that they would. I think Joe should just move her things out of my office. I think that that would be a good thing for her to do.
So who is Joe?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Kathy. We decided to use our own names. I forgot. Yes.
So tell us more. Tell us more about wanting Kathy to move out.
Well, she had her things stored in my office.
I am happy to move my things out of your office. I'll put them right back in the trunk of my car.
I think that would be a good idea.
Well, I don't know why we're here then, because we could have done that on our own.
So what is it about this that's creating a problem? Is it...
Well, it just, nothing has... Okay, I'm a teacher aide. She's a counselor. I know that gives her a little more authority than I have at the school. But I just didn't see her as the kind of person that she is now.
I'm hearing a lot of frustration here.
Yeah, it's been really hard.
Ouch.
So what made it feel so hard to you that what Annette has done?
Well, she was the one, I mean, we were both excited. She was the one that said, gosh, if you're just working out of your car, bring your things in, keep them in my office.
But then?
Well, it's just not working.
Could you describe that a little more about what's not working?
Well, she kind of violated my space and took away some of my privacy in my office.
What happened?
Well, I came back to my office and she had gone through everything.
So you felt really violated?
I really felt fine.
So Kathy, Annette says that you had violated things in her office. Does that seem like news to you, or is that something you knew?
Well, it's total over-exaggeration. I mean, no, I wanted my role-play book. I had to have my role-play book. I did not violate her office.
So you went in and got a role-play book in her office when she wasn't there, is that?
That would have been nice. That's what I wanted to do because it's supposed to be on the shelf. It was not there. So I looked for it. But she really left my office a mess.
Has ever anything like this happened before?
No.
What was it about the mess that upset you so much?
Well, she'd gone through all of my things, and, you know, my office should be private. I'm a counselor, and people shouldn't be going through my things.
You felt like she was violating confidence with other students?
Yes.
Can you be more specific about what your room was like?
Well, it was obvious she'd just gone through everything.
So, Kathy, have you had someone, have you had your house broken into or had someone violate the your space, what you considered your space before?
Well, I mean, the kids trashed our computer room once just looking for some books, and that was pretty awful, but I don't know. I mean, we don't have anything confidential that's problem.
Well, how did that make you feel when you came into the computer room that time?
I was really ticked. I thought, you kids, you know, just ask me if you want something. I wasn't happy.
Were you aware of Annette's concern about the privacy of her work?
You know, I mean, now that I hear her talking about this, she needs to know, when I pulled open that drawer of files, I left it immediately. I did not read through those files. If that's what she thinks, she doesn't know me. I don't know if that's what she's thinking, but that did not happen. I swear, I did not read the files.
Was that a concern of yours, Annette?
Yes, it was, but I think hearing what Kathy has to say, that she was looking for something, helps me to understand that why she was in my office, and that helps.
Kathy, do you understand that Annette's frustration at the mess that she found?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, I do these, it's not just our school that I work with. I work with another school in Wenatchee, and I was headed, I didn't leave enough time, but I needed to grab that role play book and be there, and I wanted to do a good job, and that role play book was not there.
It sounds like you were kind of living in a tight time span where you might not have been able to put things back the way you would have liked.
Absolutely.
To.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you could tell us that helped us understand the situation?
Yeah.
And this is for both of you.
Yeah, I tried to talk to her. What did she do? She turned and walked away. Just like that. She's a counselor. She turned and walked away from me.
Annette?
I was on my way to a faculty meeting, and I was still pretty upset from how I had found my office, and I knew I didn't have time to talk to her about what had happened and why I was so upset, because I knew I had to, I was presenting at the faculty meeting and I had to be there within minutes, and I knew I didn't have time to talk it over with her.
You had a faculty meeting then?
Yeah,
I hear that in the best case scenario, both of you would have loved to have a little bit more time to be present to what happened, but that there were other constraints on your ability to work this out in the moment. Is that right?
Sounds like you're both on pretty short time schedules.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, knowing that what book she was looking for, and I had used it, and I haven't put it back, because again I was trying to get so many things done, and it was her book. So.
Gosh, you had, oh gosh. Well, and I felt like an idiot when I ended up. I went ahead, went over to Wenatchee and just said, you guys were going to have to make something up. So I mean, they had to help me with the role play, and I felt.
Yeah.
Do you, Annette, you understand what Kathy is saying?
I can understand she must have been very frustrated by not being able to find what she needed.
And how about you, Kat?
I don't know if she knows how important to me a sense of organization is, because I do kind of clip along, but if I know something was right there, and I guess we never really had a plan, so maybe we didn't agree to that. I just assumed that. Yeah.
So do you think you guys are ready to maybe start thinking about solutions?
Woo-hoo! You guys are good. See, I mean, maybe that's just the natural experience that you bring to this situation, and the empathy and the desire to help. But that, I mean, that is a realistic role play, and in a few, and we said we're not taking off these masks unless they really, you know, do it. They really help us feel that they've come off. So thank you and congratulations for your work as mediators.
Yeah, just stop stealing the other person's stuff.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Stop stealing the other person's stuff.
Put it back where you found it.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah.
Putting things back.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating, though, because I think a lot of times we assume that somebody has bad intent when really there's, like, outer circumstances, like time constraints, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, of course you would have wanted to talk through, but you had to run, and of course you wouldn't have gone sorting through all her stuff, but
you
had to
find
what you needed to go. Like,
yeah.
But then how the other party just assumes that the other person is just careless or
yeah.
invasive or
whatever.
Yeah. That time constraint one is probably one of the biggest ones we've deal with. There was one other thing when, was it Jason or Jonas? I'm not sure what his name was, that
Jonas.
Was here with the children. And I think there's something that happens there with children in mediation, in that so many times these kids are coming with a lot of baggage. And I hope there's somebody, if a child is, if that's being repeated over and over, that somebody is noting that and realizing that that child might need a little more help.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And we always, at least at the elementary school level and at the middle school or junior high level, we have a coach present. And that coach has the responsibility of reporting into the mediation
mm-hmm.
coordinator. Also, we do follow-up. You know, a week after the mediation, the kids are asked to sign a little form. The agreement I sign on such and such has been kept, has not been kept, has been kept partly. I do or do not need more help. But still, you're right. There can be things. But I've seen, too, the kids have so much empathy for each other when they hear the
uh-huh.
stories, you know. So it's really powerful. Kids that are mediators said, oh, gosh, I never I never knew she was feeling that way. I just thought that kid was kind of mean to people.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what's going on at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that comes out.
And the examples of you two, given the situation and the proximity, which other kids have, I mean, kids have too, but you could take your initial stuff and carry and build a better friendship because you've been able to understand each other a little bit,
yeah,
even if it was still a different situation.
We close each mediation with the mediators complimenting each participant for what they did that helped the mediation move along.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that is so powerful when these kids come in feeling like there is no solution to this. Go out feeling, oh my gosh, I'm a problem solver, you know, and look what we did, and this is our plan. So it's like, for me, it's like, why doesn't every school district in the world allow kids the opportunity to learn how to serve each other? Yeah. Instead of taking it to the teacher and, you know, teacher is supposed to solve it, or sometimes I don't have time to deal with this, and, you know, whatever. So, thanks. Well, I want to close with a couple of picture books, and for me, picture books are thank you, Annette, for playing.
Thank you, Kathy.
picture books are a treasure for all ages, and at church we do have stories for all ages, and that includes picture books, and I really love these, so I'm on the lookout to collect books. This one is called Duck Rabbit by Amy Krause Rosenthal and Tom Lickenhill. Hey, look, a duck. That's not a duck. That's a rabbit. Are you kidding me? It's totally a duck. It's for sure a rabbit. See, there's his bill. What are you talking about? Those are ears, silly. It's a duck, and he's about to eat a piece of bread. It's a rabbit, and he's about to eat a carrot. Wait, listen, did you hear that sound? I heard duck sounds. That's funny. I distinctly heard rabbit sounds. Now, the duck is wading through the swamp. No, the rabbit is hiding in the grass. See? There, see? It's flying. Flying! It's hopping! Look, the duck is so hot, he's getting a drink. No, the rabbit is so hot, he's cooling off his ears. Here, look at the duck through my binoculars. Sorry, still a rabbit. Here, ducky, ducky. Here, you cute little rabbit. Oh, great. You scared him away. I didn't scare him away. You scared him away. You know, maybe you were right. Maybe it was a rabbit. Thing is, now I'm actually thinking it was a duck. Well, anyway, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Hey, look, an anteater. That's no anteater. That's a brachiosaurus. And at the end, and then I turn this over and it says, hey, look, a zebra. So that's really one of my favorites. Two other sweet ones that we had this swimming, Leo Leone, when our kids were little tiny ones.
Yeah.
And it talks about how swimming gets, how a school of fish get away from the big fish that's going to eat them. And another one, I kind of forgotten about this, we had it on the bookshelf, but a little girl came to our home recently. We had a cow tails around the fire pit, and she read Click Clack Moo. Cows that type and know how to go on strike. I mean, what an idea to implement for little kids. But then why have it just in the world of cows? Why not let it be real for the kids? Quilts in the Attic.
Quilts in the Attic by Robin Flasher, pictures by Ati Forberg. Early one morning, as the rain fell outside, Rosie and Natasha climbed the long, narrow stairway to the attic. They went straight to the old trunk in the corner and began to haul out the quilts. "I am the king," said Natasha. "Me too," said Rosie. "I am the fast wind," huffed Natasha. "Me too," said Rosie. Natasha leaped up. "I'm a star high in the sky." "Me too," said Rosie. "No, you're not," said Natasha. "Yes, I am," said Rosie. "Then I'll push you right down to the ground," growled Natasha. "No, you won't," said Rosie. "Oh, yes, I will." "Then," said Rosie, "I'll just be a quilt." And she lay down flat on the floor and didn't move. Not an inch, not a half of an inch. "I'll roll you up in a ball," said Natasha, but Rosie didn't blink. "Then I'm not your sister," yelled Natasha. Rosie didn't even sigh. Natasha thought. "Rosie," she said, "I know. I'll be a quilt too." Rosie jumped up. "You can be the same quilt as me." Then they hugged each other tight. They played and played through the morning and into the afternoon. By the time the sun came out from behind the clouds, Rosie and Natasha had fallen fast asleep. Sometimes kids need to know the power that they have. Just some of the others, what would you do when something wants to eat you? One of us, a little girl who has to find her, or who the other kids believe she has to be in their clique. Playing War, a book that I wrote after a little boy told me I wish they had a war for kids, a real one. We could beat anyone big time. Mm-hmm. Maggie and the Goodbye Gift. Thank you for coming, Carpy. An absolutely beautiful story about creativity in turning strangers into friends. Enemy Pie, probably one of my all-time favorite books in the world. My nephew and I went to a Peacemakers potluck and decided that we would raise money to buy a copy of Enemy Pie for our library. So we dressed up and sold rhymes for a nickel. And people were so enthralled with the idea that we got enough money to get all of the libraries in Yamhill County a copy of it.
What was it you sold?
Rhymes.
Rhymes.
We would ask, they would buy a rhyme for us to and Gifts from the Enemy, Three Little Wolves and the Big Bad Pig, that's that perspective. And then a book that I just want to share, you know, we have how-to books, recipe books, all kinds of things. This is a kid's how-to book. If you choose not to hit a dozen skills that make kids powerful problem solvers, and why not, you know, one mom told me that the two of the kids in the family got in a scrap, and the girl who had been a mediator and had her copy of this book said, wait, I'm going to go in my room, get my book, and we'll find out what you need to do. So that was a kid saying, I know there are 12 skills that we can use. The last one is rely on your own smarts. So I would like us to close with you telling me one idea that you have found meaningful to you in problem solving or conflict resolution that, you know, that works, or that, you know, or that you want to learn better, or something that is that sharing your own smarts. And we're over, so we won't play this game, but I'll tell you how we do this, because it's fun. We roll this back and forth. We stand in a circle, we roll this back and forth and fill in the blanks. Every time it comes to us, we give an idea of one thing that we could do to be a good problem solver. in the end, when we have our web woven, we stand up and practice weaving. You know, it's this orange spider web thing. We practice just raising and lowering it like a trampoline top or something like that. And then we see if our idea bounces. Mm-hmm. And I throw this ball in and I encourage the kids to get to 5. And then, okay, if you can get to 5 bounces, then let's try for 10. And we've, you know, kids can sometimes get a rhythm going and cooperating with each other and go up to their 20s and keep going. Just having fun, celebrating their way of being good problem solvers. So maybe we could just go around and you could share either a skill that, you know, you want to take more to heart, learn more, or something you've found in your own life, you know, a totally different process than what we've used. You know, I heard something, a group of Quakers had a what they call knee-to-knee, and it's with your spouse. You sit knee-to-knee and talk. And somebody said, you know, I haven't done that with my spouse for a while. So, do you want to start?
I just want to put a plug in for family meetings. We call them powwows. We've had them for years. And for me, the process, you know, it is important. But I think the main thing for me personally is getting you into that mindset. I mean, you walk in knowing this is what we're doing. We're solving problems today. And it's just, it makes it easier for me. And that's just my own personal. I mean, you can kind of click in. It's easy to click out of problem solving, but you can also click in. And if you have a kind of a habitual system, then, okay, that's what we're doing. Yeah, I don't really feel like it, but, you know, we always had treats.
Yeah.
We always had refreshments at ours. And the kids, when they're little, you know, well, at least they're going to get treats at the end. So, you know, I mean, I don't think it's such a bad thing to bribe them into a family meeting. So, anyway, that's my love for family meetings.
I need to run upstairs and do some things before dinner, but I just want to thank you. I mean, even coming in late, this has been amazing. And I know from, you know, being a pastor, from being a person who counts myself as wise, you know, when mm-hmm. people come and they want help, you know, you listen to their story and you do all that stuff. But I think I've just noticed the natural human instinct in me to, like, want to help them. Mm-hmm. I mean, one, it saves time because, like, let's get going on with the solution. But how powerful it is to really let them kind of lean into the situation themselves and for the solutions to start to come up out of the folks that are in the thick of it is so much more powerful. So,
to turn it to them, but yeah. You help facilitate.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, you're walking with them. It's not like you're abandoning them, like, oh, you guys figured it out, but that you're still accompanying them. But it really giving them, I mean, just that empowerment of like, oh, yeah, I have the capacity to figure this out. I mean, for kids, that's amazing, but I think even for adults, it's a really big deal.
Yeah,
so, anyway,
Linda.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming in and hopping into those role plays.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I enjoy it. So.
And there are handouts here. I'll leave them out on the table
okay.
So you can stop back. Family meetings, how and why, and some role
okay.
play
and
things.
And here's your
so.
Tubes.
Okay.
Actually, can I take this last handout?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Okay. Others, what's an idea, a tip, something you found works?
With our family, we always used humor a bit as well. And that, with 5 boys and 1 girl and a pair of twins who fought for 1 entire year over who had whose jeans on, and they were the same size. Mother wanted to leave home. But humor has always been a big asset for us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lola. And boy, sometimes I wish it was a natural gift, but maybe there's a way of developing a lightheartedness that you can giggle sometimes.
Yeah.
And thanks. Others.
Kind of reminding me of the idea of a plan, you know, having a plan to, you know, solve things. is a nice concept, and it's a good reminder, especially for couples, I think. But this work you were doing with little children is really wonderful, and it can translate, obviously, to adults, too. And it reminded me of so many things, like from natural helper training to drug-free years to, you know, the Adlerian Dreiker's approach to childhood. You know, I mean, there's just so much valuable material here, you know, really a lot of good stuff.
Well, this is a little off of what you've been doing, but I know one of the things in our church that our pastor announced when she first came, and I still think it's, she's been there over 20 years, and I think this is one of the reasons she's been there for that long. She just said, in this church, there is no triangulation. You go right directly. You don't come to me first or anyone else first. You go directly to the person that you want to check things out with. And, you know, through the years, I think there have been several situations that I've found to be really difficult, you know, to face them and to face the person and say, you know, this is really how I feel about this. And then ending up kind of like filling in the blanks there and coming to an understanding. But, you know, having just seen it from one point of view and then being able to see it from both points of view. And the only time in our church that I have seen that not work was a woman who was mentally ill. And it took us a long time to kind of figure that out, that she really was not capable of no triangulation, I guess, is the only way I can say it. But, yeah, I just find that is a very useful thing.
Neil or David?
Thank you. This has been very thought provoking. I already shared ouch. No blame, no shame is a platform. No fault platform. So I tell folks all the time when I'm working together, I'm not here to blame anybody. I'm not blaming anybody. Talk about intergenerational cascade of violence. A number of things. Swearing energy is really important in being able to convey not just what, but how much. You don't have to be crude. So shut the fudge up is better. Okay. But the energy is important to translate how strongly we feel about things, because if we miss that, we're not really catching what the other person is trying to say. And in the hospital setting, another thing we're trying to teach the professionals, the doctors especially, the nurses are much better about it, but it's intense presence. You know, I'm really busy, but you get 3 minutes, 5 minutes of my undivided attention, of being fully present.
Right.
In the moment with somebody, and like you're talking about, really trying to listen and hear from the perspective of the person that we're trying to work with, what's going on, what is your real story, of what and how much.
So to really be with them and to be willing to feel the intensity of what they are doing. And
to invite the intensity.
Okay. And David, we just found out on the trail that you've written a book. Could you say the title of that?
It's called Stop Arguing and Start Understanding, 8 Steps to Solving Family Conflicts. And it's available as a free download off my my website, familyhealing.com.
Sounds like a great resource.
Yeah.
And great title.
I had some help with it.
I think so many times too, when it's a really bad conflict, you're not going to solve it in one sitting.
Well, think about ethnic wars.
Yeah. I'm so glad that in our state our divorce courts have mediators that are required when children are present. Because that.
But They don't do enough of it, though. Mm-hmm. They need to refer more. I mean, it's the law's there, but they don't always.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, well, the ones I've known, it's been mandatory.
It's also hard to get people to want to do that. There's a whole introduction.
That's the
process.
Better reason they need to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Same thing in terms of referrals into mental health.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have to help people kind of understand there really is a benefit and it's a safe mm-hmm. thing that they
yeah.
can do. And that's a long mm-hmm. process sometimes to even
oh,
get
yeah.
people to the point of saying,
yeah.
okay, I'll give it a try. I'll try mm-hmm. the mediation. I'll try talking to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. With an ed, I'd like to think about having a plan for working with a situation with our daughter of long standing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the daughter is of long standing.
Yeah.
But
the situation
but
is
the
also
situation
been
has also been difficult for her and for us. So I.
The plan, yeah.
Well, I see your skills, I see your caring, I see your natural empathy, and with that, you have what you need. And even to learn, we have more resources just right at hand, and even, you know, just hearing Jonah's story here and him say, you know, I have something that I could share with our school here. How exciting if we just stay open to helping each other learn new things and gathering in ideas from others too. So thank you for coming.
Thank you.
You know, Holden is a community into itself, and the winter community here has to work on this a lot.
Oh, cabin fever, that's it.
Very intense. Very intense.
Have to learn
yeah.
to get along.
Yeah,
oh,
we
yeah.
do.
Well, any group this
mm-hmm.
close, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it's hard to get through that snow.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Walking down our stairway from way up on top. Sally Tan, I think it's.